You're listening to SBS Radio broadcasting around Australia with Nitza Lowenstein. Welcome if you just join us. It's wonderful to have you here and welcome to our listeners and viewers on Facebook. You've got a chance to see us broadcasting live from SBS Studios in our Taman in Sydney. And our guest today is the clinical psychologist Amanda Gordon. Amanda, welcome to SBS.
Thank you, Nitza.
Good to have you here.
Thank you.
Amanda, our topic today is life after 50. Many of our listeners, I think a bit over 50, a bit more after 50. And even if you are not 50 yet, you know, we hope you'll get there. Everybody should get to 50 at least. And there are lots of challenges when you get to 50. I will just start in the very general challenge, midlife crisis. I've got lots of questions from listeners that I'm going to convey to Amanda on your behalf. But my first question is about life crisis. Is it life crisis in 2017 different to life crisis 10 years ago, 50 years ago? Life crisis that our parents had and grandparents had when they reached 50?
Yeah. Oh, Nitza, thanks for having me. It's interesting to think about what the midlife crisis means and, in fact, what is midlife? Because nowadays, 50 is about midlife. But a midlife crisis in the past happened when people were 35 or 40 because that was midlife. We're living a lot longer and there are lots of different challenges as a result. Many people are having children later. So, in fact, we're starting to be grandparents rather than later. Nowadays, most people, when they become grandparents, they're already 50, whereas in our parents' generation, they were, in fact, still in their 40s. In fact, I was in my 40s when I became a grandmother for the first time.
That's very lucky.
I'm very lucky because you're young and you can run around and do things. And as we get older, it's a bigger stretch to do things. But in a psychological sense, a life crisis is about coming to terms with the changes in the external world and integrating them into the sense of yourself as a coping, resilient human being. So there are different challenges as we get older. For instance, Nitza, I do Israeli dancing, and many of my friends with whom I do Israeli dancing have been doing it together with me for the last 20 years or so. We've all become a little older. And the aches and the creaks and the hips and the knees, etc., are different than they were 20 years ago. Does that mean we give up dancing? Does that mean we no longer see ourselves as Israeli dancers? Does it mean that we have to sit back and take only sedentary activity? Well, no. Maybe we can't jump around quite as much as we did, or else we suffer the consequences later. But still, as people after 50, we see ourselves as active, engaged, members of the Israeli dancing community around the world and love to share that. And we don't let our age define how we see ourselves, even though we might have to just modify our activity slightly.
So what you're saying is actually adapt.
We have to adapt and we have to come to terms with how the changes are and what they mean. And for many people after 50, the changes regard all the different generations with whom we live. So we no longer have young children. We might have our own children leaving home or themselves becoming parents. We change our role from being mainly parent to being grandparent. And we often have to change our role to be a carer of elderly parents instead of just being able to engage with them in an equal way. So we take on that extra role as well. So our life stage as we are over 50 has to do with changing relationships as well.
I know that many people, and I've got a question here from a listener from Perth actually, and it's a male listener, and he wrote to me that he's actually afraid of growing old. He's afraid. What does it mean to be old? I mean, old age really scares him.
There are many people like this. And the first comment, of course, is the one that we all make, and that is it's better than the alternative. We rather would be old than no longer be here. And we do have to embrace the changes that old age is going to bring us. The good news is that in Australia today, being over 50 does not equate to being old. It perhaps equates to being middle-aged, but certainly not old. But of course, we have to confront our own mortality. We have to confront the fact that we are going to get sick. And when we get sick, we may not recover as quickly as we did previously. We're going to have to confront the fact that perhaps we are becoming the head of our family because the older generations have died. And there are lots of changes that do make this. It's actually quite realistic to be a little fearful. But fear doesn't have to paralyze us. By acknowledging the fear, you can make choices about how you live the next stage of your life.
That's right. Stay active. Do what you can do. I want to go through a few questions. People went into the trouble of sending me questions. And one question was from a listener, and it's quite a long email she sent. She said, I'm very, very depressed, as after so many years in the workforce as a teacher, I retired. And at the beginning, it was wonderful, like a holiday. But now I miss the routine. I miss the children at school. I mostly miss the social aspect of my job, getting up in the morning, getting dressed nicely, and meeting other people during the day, the children, the other teachers and the parents. I feel absolutely useless now. I can't even get out of bed in the morning. What for? To go shopping? I need nothing. I even lost interest in shopping. Sometimes I stay in bed all day, and sometimes I stay in my pajama the whole day. Why should I get dressed? I don't play bridge like some of my friends. I hate playing cards, and I never joined friends for lunch. My children don't even need me, and I feel worthless, and I'm getting more and more depressed.
Wow, that's a story that we've heard so many times before, and interesting that our letter writer has been very aware that people are going to give her solutions. Please note that any solution that I might have chosen to give her, like play bridge or look after your grandchildren or go shopping, have been wiped out before we start. And that's what often happens to psychologists. People know that it's not just a matter of finding an activity and it's going to make them better. There's something much more that is going on for this woman. I note that it's not her work that she is missing. That's not the problem. The problem is the social engagement, the feeling like she has a life of meaning. And part of the meaning is engaging with other people. And part of the meaning is doing something of value like teaching. And that's why she doesn't want to go shopping and she doesn't want to play bridge. But let me tell you right now, I don't know your name, or I would say your name, I'm sorry. The most important thing you have to do is to recognize that you have a choice. You do not have to collude with your depression. You don't have to say, I will let the depression win. I think it's really healthy in a funny way that you've actually recognized that you are depressed. That's a really important thing, that you can see that there is something missing in your life. And now it's time to do something about it. You do have to get up every day and have a shower and get dressed. You have to plan an activity during the day during which you will speak to someone every single day. It is vital that you do that. It's really important that you don't give in and say, I'm depressed, I won't do anything, because you will just get more and more depressed. I think you also need some special support from a professional. You cannot do this on your own, because clearly your friends have given you all the suggestions in the world and you've rejected them all. If you would see a psychologist locally, I know that psychologist would help you deal with that depression in a way that will lead you to find where that life of meaning will take you, what the activities are that are going to work for you so that you engage with people. It might be that the holiday that you need is to care for other people, and maybe it will be as a volunteer. Maybe it will be working within a local community organization. Or it may be that your life of meaning really is going to be involved with family. And I don't know whether it's going to be younger family members or older family members. But you're going to have to find a life of meaning that is not colluding with your depression. And I'd be really happy to talk further on this at some other time, Nitsa. I think it's a really important issue. The becoming depressed is common. At times of loss, we feel very sad, and in fact, we can become depressed, but we can make choices about how we manage ourselves when we discover we are feeling like that. I'm not saying just get over it. I'm really not saying that. I understand that depression can feel overwhelming, but you can make a choice every morning whether you will pull the covers over your head and collude with the depression, or whether you'll say, I feel terrible, but I'm not going to let the depression beat me today. Today I'm going to get up and engage with the world. And if you start to do that, you'll find that life of meaning that is missing right now.
And you're listening to SBS Radio broadcasting around Australia. And thank you if you just joined us on Facebook. We had a little bit of a glitch before, but I think we are now. You can see us on Facebook. And our studio guest is the clinical psychologist Amanda Gordon. And our topic today is all the challenges after 50. When people reach 50, we talk about midlife crisis. And I was just, Amanda was answering one of my listeners that wrote to us that she was a teacher for many years, I think 30, 40 years, and suddenly she retired and she feels useless. She enjoyed her freedom at the beginning and then she was bored and slowly she sank into depression. And you heard what Amanda said, it's a matter of choice, really force yourself to make choices. And I want to tell you on that note, you probably don't know, but Amanda came to us in December. And we were talking about, in general, about all sorts of challenges that people are facing. And a Melbourne listener wrote to us and told us that she feels trapped in her marriage.
Mm-hmm.
That's not connected to our topic today, but that was, and I must tell Amanda and you, the outcome of that conversation. So that listener was writing to Amanda. She was been married, what I think, 41 or 42 years. And she couldn't leave the marriage. She felt trapped. The marriage, as far as she was concerned, finished. She didn't want to be there, but she felt for all sorts of reasons, children and financial reasons, she couldn't leave. And Amanda actually gave her an advice. She said, your problem is that you don't want to take any decision. You either stay and be happy with your decision or move. Try a way to leave the marriage and then you'll be happy with this decision. Just not taking decision, that's what you told the listener, is your problem. And guess what? The listener actually phoned me and told me that she was thinking what Amanda told her about taking decision and feeling trapped. And so she actually took initiative and she found a way to actually leave her husband.
Hmm?
She actually left the marriage. It gave her courage and it gave her, actually faced her with the choice. And before she said, oh, I can't do it, it's financial and this and that, she actually found ways to leave the marriage and she phoned me to thank me. Not that she left the marriage, but that she feels much better about herself and about her life because it was no good for her being trapped, feeling trapped forever in a marriage, especially she was, I think she was 59 and she got married very young and she really wanted to move on in her life. So thank you, Amanda. I should let you know that you helped one of our listeners.
I'm very pleased, but I also want to note that people must be very careful that I'm not giving specific advice. And you might like to take on board some ideas such as not colluding with depression or making a responsible decision and making choices in your own life. But then in order to apply that to yourself, you might need to see a psychologist yourself or work very hard for yourself to come to the conclusion that works for you. I'm not trying to give blanket advice that you'll take. Certainly, I don't want an uprising of women or men leaving their marriages. My advice is usually that you can usually find a way of making a choice to be in and to make it work and be happy in there, because life is usually much easier in there than out. So my advice to you is to respond when I say something. You might say, aha, that's me. But it won't be entirely you. You are unique and you have to think about what's going to work for you.
Now, obviously, she didn't take your advice face value, but it enabled her to think about a situation.
Good, good.
Because the fact that she wrote to us that she's feeling trapped, you said to her, you mustn't feel trapped.
No.
Because
no one is trapped.
If you feel trapped, you can't do anything about it. Yeah. But you should try do something about it.
Good.
So she was thinking, shall I take this choice or that choice? And how did I work this choice work? And how will I do that?
The minute you recognize that in life you have choices, you can get on and live life. That's what it's all about.
And you're listening to SBS Shalom Australia, broadcasting around Australia with Nitza Lowenstein. And our studio guest and on Facebook, thank you for watching us on Facebook, is the clinical psychologist Amanda Gordon. Amanda, I've got a question for you that is actually relevant to many of my friends.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody wrote to me and they said, we are, I think it was a couple.
Mm-hmm.
We are in our mid-60s. We did what most of our friends did. We sold a big house and moved into an apartment. We absolutely hate it. We regret every minute, but we can't do anything about it. It's too late. My husband doesn't complain, as he wanted to get rid of the house. He hated the garden and the pool. But I'm really depressed about it. And I must tell you, on that note, I know somebody else, and I won't mention names, and I don't want to disclose who it is. They also moved from a big house, and she told me just the other day, I can't even unpack my boxes. I've got nowhere to put things.
Yeah.
And I feel that I have to throw, you know, people say, throw away, don't keep things. But these things that my degrees, things I collected all my
life. There's room for her degree.
You know?
Her degrees will stay in the house. Let me tell you again, life is about making choices. And the worst thing we can do is make a choice and regret it. Because that's what leads to depression. When you look back and look at and say, I made a bad decision, or I wish I had done this, or I wish I had done that, you'll end up being depressed. You have to live with where you are now. You made a choice. And you know what? At the time, it was the right choice. It was the right thing. Your husband didn't enjoy the garden. The cleaning of the pool was terrible. The children would come over and there'd be a mess everywhere. And you know what, Nitza? In Australia today, most of us have too much stuff. Most of the stuff that we all need to get rid of is stuff we haven't looked at in years. Now, with clothes, I don't go by the three-year rule. You know, if you haven't worn it for 3 years, you should throw it out. Because I can't do that. But there are some things that are really ready to be gone because you are never going to wear them again. Just because you have massive wardrobes doesn't mean you should keep them. Just because you have the massive house doesn't mean that you should keep the things. Maybe the trick would be to declutter first and then sell the house and buy the apartment when you have fewer things. But let me tell you, the psychological issue around this is living with regrets. Instead of saying we made a choice, now we are going to turn our life into something great because now we're freer. I must tell you, I love apartment living. I can pack my bags, lock the apartment door, know that the environment is safe and go away.
You see, that's the point. There is no one answer for all. Because some people really, I've got friends that moved to an apartment and they absolutely love it. They had no problem. They actually bought all new furniture, everything. And for them, that was the best thing.
But the issue is not apartment or a house. That's not the issue. The issue is when you make a choice in your life, go with it and turn it into the right choice by living a good life wherever you are. It's not about where she is. Right now she's mourning the loss. And you have to mourn the loss, there's no doubt. You mourn the loss of the big house even when you made the choice to sell the big house, even when by selling the big house you're freeing yourself, you've got more money perhaps so that you can travel, or you just, you have less to look after as you get older, or you're all on one level. All those things that you've made the decision to move for are there. That doesn't mean you won't miss a whole lot of other things around the house, even the terrible garden and the pool. You'll miss them even though you haven't swum for 15 years. You'll wish you had a pool because that's grieving. But when you get through the grieving, it's time to move forward and say, I'm sad about the house. However, I have a good life in this apartment. And make it a good life. Make it a life of meaning, like that previous caller who was depressed because there was a life without meaning. Where you live isn't the thing that's going to make the difference.
And you're listening to SBS Radio broadcasting around Australia with Nitza Lowenstein. You are on Shalom Australia on SBS Radio. And our studio guest today is the clinical psychologist Amanda Gordon. And welcome to you if you are watching us on Facebook. Lovely to have you. You can see us in the studio, broadcasting out of the studio in Altamen. Now, this is the secret. We are sitting here talking. We are on radio and on Facebook. And if you missed on Facebook, you can always go back to Facebook and watch us. I think we started like 5 minutes in, so we apologize. We had a glitch with the recording. I don't know why, but, you know, this is life. Sometimes we
and we can't have regrets.
We can't do anything about it. We just missed it.
We have to try the new experiment and move forward and say, oh, well, that might not have been perfect, but we'll try again next time. And that's what we do. The worst thing about radio on Facebook, Nitsa, you have to put makeup on. When I just do radio.
I had to put a jacket on. I couldn't come with my pyjamas to broadcast today.
Exactly. When you just do radio late night, can wear Ugg boots and everything. But today I had to put on makeup anyway.
Exactly. I always put lipstick regardless.
Being over 50.
Even before. We're in my 20s also, nothing changed.
So do we have another question?
Yes, I've got a question, very important question. And I think that it was just one line and it actually meant a lot. The one question was, to retire or not to retire? That's the question.
That is the question. Do not retire from life. It may be that it's time to retire from your full-time income-producing job. If it is mundane and it's not providing you with the social connections that you need anymore and it is tiring you and you have plenty of other things to do to replace it, you might actively make a choice to retire at this time. However, many people find that the job gives them so much more than just the money, you know, that it really is worth remaining on there. And I think you should talk to your partner as well, because sometimes your partner and you shouldn't both be in the house at the same time underfoot.
I know people that are killing each other since they retired, both of them.
There are many things that you have to consider when you think about retiring, but the key is to recognize that you're not retiring from life even if you retire from your job, and you have to instead have other engaging, meaningful activities, not just planning for the next holiday, and not just a hobby.
You touched on the next question
because
somebody actually from Sydney wrote to me and said that since her husband retired, their marriage is just on the rocks because he drives her crazy. He depends on her on everything. He was like a businessman, very successful. Now he retired and he's bored. So he wants her attention all the time. She's got her own life. She's used to do things without him around from morning to night. Now he wants to join her for lunches with her girlfriends. She doesn't want him there.
Yes.
Lunches. And he wants to be entertained all the time. He hasn't found his feet yet. She said, what am I going to do with my husband?
Okay, it's a really important question and I'm asked it a lot. And it also happens when both of you have been working in high-powered jobs and you both stop and, you're dependent on other people before and now you depend on each other. I think it's really important to have some activities together and some activities that are entirely independent of each other. So many successfully retired couples find that they have a day a week that belongs to the two of them. I say, okay, Tuesdays is our day. We won't organise to do anything with anyone else. And that's our day. And we will go to the shops or we'll go to the movies or we'll go for a drive. But that's our day. But the rest of the time, we'll take responsibility for ourselves. Or they say, we want to have our days separate, but we'll start our evening earlier than we did when we were working such frenetic hours. And we'll agree that we'll both get home around 5 o'clock and start our evening and spend our evenings together. It's a matter of communication. You know, your poor husband might think that you are really enjoying having extra time with him, just as he's enjoying having extra time with you. And the only way you'll find out is by having a proper, considered conversation, communicate with each other. You know what? When we live in our mad lives with racing around, doing all the chores we have to do, working full-time, etc., we actually can lose the art of communication. And once we're both at home again, we have to communicate. It's a matter of taking the time and the energy and putting the goodwill in and the good humour in to have the conversations over time, not just one, because you'll make an agreement and he'll forget and he'll want to do it differently and he'll change it and it doesn't matter. You'll keep communicating until you find the structure of your days that work for you so that you maintain your privacy and your independent life, but you also have a joint life, which is the joy and the thing that I think you were probably both looking forward to, thinking it would be wonderful when he retired and you'd spend the time together. Mm-hmm. You can make it work.
She said, actually, that she never had a problem when they went on holidays together because it was just a holiday, limited time.
Exactly.
But now, all the time together.
So they probably still like each other, you know?
They don't. She said that, you know, she said with the humor, with the lots of humor, she said, he drives me crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, sometimes people are more humorous than others when they say that to a psychologist. I make the diagnosis here.
I've got a question that concerns, I think, many of our Israeli migrants to Australia, and this is all the parents in Israel.
Yes.
Because they came here. I've got a couple that told me that they came here when in their 30s and they established themselves here. They are in the high-tech industry, and they don't know the parents are getting old in Israel, and they feel very guilty.
Yeah.
They bring the parents here sometimes, but it's limited time. And now the parents are getting too old to travel.
Yeah.
You know, it was a problem when the parents came here is to entertain the parents because they didn't have friends here. They didn't have the language. They couldn't speak English really well. So they felt that they had to. But it was better choice than nothing. But now the parents can't make the trip from Israel to Australia and back because they are too frail.
Yeah, it's
they
uncommon.
Feel really, and they don't know what to do.
This is a world where we move around, we're so mobile and we can travel around, and at different stages in our life, it's okay to move around. And there comes a point where we recognize that not only do we have a responsibility to our parents, but they actually might need us. And there can be a lot of guilt associated with it. This couple that you're describing are certainly not alone, and I see it with parents in other regions of the world as well. Sometimes the parents have moved away, by the way. Australian parents have moved away, perhaps made Aliyah themselves. The children are still in Australia and then the parents need them. So for a variety of reasons that can happen, that we are separated from family members who need our support. Yes, guilt can be an emotion that can compel us to act, but the guilt itself is not useful. I think it's important to recognize that we were free to make life choices, and we made those life choices in good faith, not abandoning our parents, but just moving on in our lives. And that's a legitimate thing to do in the 20th and 21st century. But we do have to work out a way of ensuring that our parents are not abandoned in old age. The good news is that both Israel and Australia have relatively good welfare systems, and the aged are not left abandoned in their homes. But we have to do things to ensure connectivity. The most important thing are things like Skype, I should add, and Facebook and various ways of connecting. Parents, even elderly parents, can become pretty good with training at using FaceTime and Skype and various other connective activities while they're well. And you must really get that going as soon as you can. Don't wait till your parents are really elderly to get them used to talking to you like that. Even if you have parents in their 60s and you are some of our younger listeners, start now talking to them using technology and getting them to keep up with technology so that as they get older, it's a skill that they have and you can continue to do it.
WhatsApp.
Yeah, WhatsApp, whatever
easy,
the connection,
very easy.
Whatever the connectivity is, sure. Make sure you use it. The other thing is perhaps you can ensure that your parents have a network where they do live. Perhaps if they still live in the area where you grew up, you know some of the network. Maybe you even have friends who are there who will sort of adopt a parent for you from time to time. Ensure that around the Chagim that there are people that are checking up on them and making sure that they're okay. And sometimes that's the best we can do. But guilt isn't a helpful emotion unless it compels you to action. Except for that, leave the guilt behind and act with compassion and care and support. And the most important thing is to continue to communicate so that your parents know that you're thinking about them and that you want them to think about you and you're not hiding from them. And get your children to talk to your parents as well, because your parents will love it and it's good for the children.
And you are listening to SBS Radio, Shalom Australia, broadcasting around Australia with Nitza Lowenstein, live on radio, live on Facebook, live on the web.
We're everywhere.
And our guest today, this is Modern Times. And our guest today is the clinical psychologist Amanda Gordon. I've got another question from again, from Israelis that immigrated to Australia. And I'll read the question. I immigrated with my wife and young children to Australia almost 30 years ago. The older I get, the more I miss Israel. I want to go back, but my wife won't even discuss it. We have two grandchildren in Sydney, and my wife helps them all the time. Mm-hmm. I'm retired now, and every time I go back to Israel, I come back to life. Life is so boring for me in Sydney. I miss my childhood friends and my friends from the army. I don't really have close friends in Australia. I feel that I'm wasting my life in Sydney, but I don't want to leave my wife. Every time I go to Israel, it is harder to come back. What should I do?
Mm. This is really the same story that we talked about earlier, Nitza. It's about living with regret instead of grieving the loss and moving on. So this is what this letter writer has to do. He has to acknowledge how sad it is, but also acknowledge that his life is here and that he made a legitimate choice all those years ago to come here and make a good life with his family. And as a result, because he's done so well, his children and his grandchildren are here and his wife is happy here. My question to you is, why don't you have close friends in Australia? It's time for you to put the effort in, to engage with the community here, to find the people here who will enrich your life. And there are plenty. Come on, we're not such a small community that you can't find some people with whom you can truly connect. I would guess that you haven't put all that much energy into building social relationships. Perhaps you've depended on your wife and you've mixed with couples and you've just been together and hung out and haven't made those close, close connections that we make when we're at school or college or army. You know, we make those really close connections and they are irreplaceable, but they're not. Because I have very close Israeli friends in Australia who live in Sydney, and I know their connections with their childhood friends remain very, very, very close. But I also know that the sort of connection we have is equally true, is equally gratifying, is equally meaningful. And that's what we have to do with our relationships at any stage in our life. We have to work on them. We have to make sure that we are putting effort into our friendships so that they are meaningful. And then none of us will be able to go around saying, I have to go back somewhere because it's the only place where I have good friends. That's a nonsense. So, make the friends.
Amanda, you're right. I mean, so he's thinking of on one solution only, going back to Israel.
Yep.
And because he's just thinking about it, he can't actually be happy here.
Yep.
So the moment he will decide that maybe he can go on holidays to Israel and make more life to himself here. I mean, he retired before he was working, so he was busy, didn't think about it.
Yep.
But now he's got time. He wants to be back in Israel. But he made the choice 30 years ago to come to Australia, and his children, grandchildren are here. His wife doesn't want even to discuss it.
No, so. But don't forget technology for yourself as well. You can talk to your old school friends by technology while you're here, even when you get too old to travel to Israel. But that doesn't mean they are the only friendships you should have. There are other important friendships here that you should be working on, building, creating, maintaining, and that will give your life joy and meaning. And by the way, if you've got all this spare time on your hand that you're spending worried that you're not in Israel, maybe you should volunteer and do something to contribute to the community here, because that will also ensure that you feel part of the Sydney community.
I've got an interesting question from Brisbane. We've got listeners in Brisbane. And the listener wrote to me and she said, I'm not working and I'm happy to help with grandchildren, but now my children are very demanding and expect me to drop everything to babysit all the time.
Yeah.
And I'm too scared to refuse.
Yeah. I wonder what she's scared of. They need her. She needn't be scared. I hear this all the time. There is something about what we're calling the entitled generation, the current generation of young parents who seem to believe that they are entitled to have their parents care for their children all the time. I don't know about you, Nitza, but I love caring for my grandchildren. It gives me great joy. But I put very strict boundaries around how that's going to work because I have a life. I had it before the children were born. I had it before the grandchildren were born. And I'm very willing to be flexible in my life and spend the time to engage with the grandchildren and to support my children in their lives. But it's their life, not mine. And by doing that and being open about it and communicating, I hope, with joy around it, about what pleasure it is to be there and always being dependable and reliable when I am there, when I do make a commitment to be there for the children, my children aren't going to withhold my grandchildren from me if I say I can't do it today. They will say, could you do it tomorrow instead, please, rather than as well. They won't turn you down. Don't be scared.
Don't feel guilty if you can't help. I mean, you need life for yourself as well. I mean, you brought up your own children, and I don't think your children should expect you to bring the grandchildren as well. You had your time. I mean, it's nice to help and enjoy the grandchildren, but don't feel that this is your duty full time.
I think there can be an issue. I mean, it is very expensive nowadays to get childcare, and there are a lot of families who depend absolutely on grandparents and actually wouldn't survive. You know, the mum wouldn't be able to go back to work if the grandparents couldn't do it. And certainly there are many grandparents who are sacrificing some of their retirement, but it's not really a sacrifice when you think about it, because the grandchildren are benefiting so much. You're giving so much of yourself, and I'm sure there will be joy in return. But put boundaries around it and know what you can do and be clear. And as long as you're clear and don't change your mind at the last minute, I don't think your children will punish you for it.
Yes. Last question, because we've got only 2 minutes left to top of the hour. And I must say that we haven't got a Yiddish report today. Our reporter, Alex Daffner, is away and is wishing you all happy Pesach. And we are not neglecting the Yiddish. It's just like he's away. So we are happy to talk to our clinical psychologist, Amanda Gordon. And you're listening to SBS Radio, broadcasting around Australia. Amanda, the last question is, that's a few questions together.
Yeah.
Is at the age of 50, 50 plus, suddenly friends get sick.
Mm.
Loss of friends, people get really sick. All sorts of MS, Parkinson, even dementia. I met a lady, she said her husband is at 65, got dementia, and it's very hard for the family to cope with the loss and with illness.
Mm.
So illness. Just two words, because one, you've got half a minute.
Half a minute.
It's such an important question.
Thing to acknowledge that as we are at different stages of our life, there are different challenges, and it's a very big challenge at this stage where we start to hit the time where our own mortality becomes clear, that it's not just about our parents who are elderly and it makes sense that they're getting sick and they're dying, but none of us are going to live forever, and we can't always predict who are the ones who are going to be hit with illness. And it's really important that we don't abandon our friends who need us at this time, both the sick person but also their partner who's caring for them, and ensure that we are good friends and support them through this time. And by doing that, we become richer. Don't avoid.
Amanda Gordon, is amazing how you managed to answer it in half a second. Thank you very much for your company today. Have a great day. We'll be next week with the latest news. Shalom from me, and happy Pesach, Nitza Lowenstein. And thank you, Amanda.